This is Rise Up Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. I'm Leanne, here with Yanilda and Nell.
And Columbia University is planning to expand into West Harlem. Citing a pressing need for more space, President Lee Bollinger and the rest of the university's administration have pegged an area known as Manhattanville as the site for construction and development. The projected development would take place roughly between 125th and 133rd Streets west of Broadway. Concrete plans have not yet been released, but two architecture firms are on the job, and Columbia is working in conjunction with the city to get the area rezoned from manufacturing to mixed use. Columbia also says it is reaching out to the community to ensure that the expansion will be beneficial to its neighbors.
So far, Columbia itself has documented 90 occupied apartments and over 1,100 jobs, mostly skilled and high-wage positions, that would be displaced by the expansion. But the administration claims the university will assist people who lose jobs or housing and that many more new jobs will be created. Community residents, business owners, and activists are very skeptical of Columbia's intentions. Universities are typically a gentrifying force, bringing overpriced restaurants and boutiques, which displace stores and services important to low-income communities.
And Columbia has not made explicit commitments to supporting the preservation of affordable housing. So housing activists fear secondary displacement as rents rise because of the university's presence above the historical dividing line of 125th Street. The university also has a long history of racist and classist interactions with the surrounding community. The most infamous incident was in 1968 when Columbia tried to build a gym in Morningside Park with separate entrances for university affiliates and community residents, reflecting a larger reality of institutional racism. Students and community activists protested and managed to halt construction of the gym during the tumultuous student strike of 1968.
Students are also weighing in now on expansion plans, and a coalition of student activist groups has come together to support community concerns and question the administration's rosy picture of expansion into West Harlem. We're joined now in the studio by Nellie Bailey of the Harlem Tenants Council and the Coalition to Preserve Community, as well as Tom Kapner of CPC and the 121st, 122nd Street Block Association. And we're joined on the phone by Liza Dwoskin of the Student Coalition to discuss how student activists and community organizations are aligning to hold the university accountable. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, Nellie, can we start with you? Can you talk about what this expansion has meant for you as a housing tenants' rights activist and why CPC, the Coalition to Preserve Community, has formed to respond?
Well, first, I think we need to start with the fact that we always talk about in our community forums, that is the tremendous pressure Harlem is already under with gentrification. And this is a situation that will clearly exacerbate that gentrification thrust into Harlem, not only into Central Harlem, but as far north as Washington Heights, which is where Columbia University also has designs with respect to expansion of its facilities there, mostly its medical research facilities in that area. So the impact on both residential rents and commercial properties is going to be tremendous, aside from the promise of jobs and all of the other stuff. With respect to the Coalition to Preserve Community, I think it was a natural formation. It was a synergy that grew out of the community with respect to Columbia's university long-standing record of institutional racism that you so correctly pointed out with respect to what happened in 1968. And I think the realization on the part of the community, and what's good about this coalition, is that it is an ethnically diverse group of community activists, of residents, of even business owners. And, of course, we have students because we have been working with the Ethics of Expansion group at Columbia University. So there was a natural need for that, and we came together out of that need.
Well, I want to bring Liza Dwoskin into the conversation, who's on the line. And Liza, can you talk about the student coalition? It formed around a teach-in that was organized, co-sponsored by community and student groups in October at Columbia. How did that all get started, and what are the objectives and strategies of the group right now?
Sure.
Well, first of all, when a bunch of us met with Nellie Bailey in the summer in response to a discussion that had been held at Columbia the previous year called The University and Its Community, or The Community and Its University, in which Nellie spoke, we realized that there was a need for students working with community members, not just in response to gentrification, but also just on larger issues relating to the Columbia relationship with Harlem. And so together, a bunch of us came together and created the teach-in in our school, which was pretty well attended, I think maybe 150 to 200 people, called The Ethics of Expansion. And that was an amazing process, just to see all the different groups in school come together, all the different activist groups working side by side with community members like the Coalition to Preserve Community, the Harlem Tenants Council, the 110th Street Block Association, and really working together in a way that felt genuine as opposed to the patronizing ways that people have worked together in the past or not worked together. And so after that, after the teach-in, we all, a bunch of students, or many students, I don't even know how many, maybe Nell, you know, but we have a lot of students on our listserv now, got together, and we've been having weekly meetings where community members attend, and we're sort of right now trying to figure out what will be the best strategy for a coalition group, and by coalition we mean having groups, all different kinds of activist groups on campus and groups that work with all sorts of different kinds of issues on campus coming together on this one particular issue. And we're right now sort of in the process of deciding whether we want it to be about gentrification at large, whether we want the group to be about Manhattanville and a specific project with Bollinger. Some of the ways we've been working with the community are we've been, you know, we have these education packets where we've been doing research about the history of the gentrification issue. We've been going to community meetings, like the meetings for the Coalition to Preserve Community, and so we're sort of keeping abreast with what, you know, at the pace of what is going on with the community. We've been meeting with school administrators, and I think that that's where our role can be important, is that we can, you know, we have this voice to school administrators because we're on the inside, and right now we're working together to create a petition, and we're sort of formulating what that petition will be, whether we'll have many specific facts about what the results of the gentrification could be, whether it will be just sort of expressing a general wariness, and we're looking at how we can both gauge the feelings of the student population, which we feel would be against the expansion if they knew the consequences, and at the same time teach what the students that might not know. And it's a delicate and exciting process right now.
Well, I want to bring Tom Kapner into the discussion as well, of the 121st, 122nd Block Association and the Coalition to Preserve Community. Tom, another way that the administration says that it's keeping its pulse on the concerns of the community is its community advisory committee, and it says that it's, you know, taking input from community leaders. Can you talk about Columbia's commitment or lack thereof to actually substantial community involvement in this process, your perspective on that?
Well, we really see it as not any different from the past. There's been a lot of talk about how Columbia has changed its ways and is much more responsive and receptive to the community. But from our point of view, really what has changed is the sophistication of their public relations apparatus. Because in particular, this so-called community advisory group, first of all, is admittedly purely advisory, but secondly, was really hand-picked by the university to include individuals that had no particular history with the university in its past expansion efforts. So it was basically an orchestrated PR move. I can tell you personally, I chaired such a group from 1980 to 1985. After the last round of Columbia expansions, we had a large town hall meeting at Riverside Church. 1,000 people attended. After 68, several years later, and the president then, Michael Sovereign, said, yes, we want to be, you know, responsive. So they agreed to form a community advisory board. Only that board was picked half by the community, and half by the elected officials, and had a couple of vice presidents from the university on it. It met for 5 years, as I said, in a futile effort. It was supposed to provide significant input from the community into the housing policies of the university. And after 5 years of negotiations, the only commitment we were able to get out of them was that they would consider to keep employees who had served for more than 30 years with the university, that they could retain their apartments. It was a joke. So, you know, basically we disbanded that group. And clearly people who picked this board knew of my history, for example, and there were many others that you know, had been involved with the university. So essentially we see this as a sophisticated public relations effort, and the formation of our coalition really was a response to that, to make sure that this time around that the community really is taken into account.
Nellie Bailey?
Yes. Let me just add a couple of things to that with respect to Columbia University's relationship with Harlem. That goes beyond just the issue of housing, affordable housing, and land acquisition. Columbia University is also the principal administrator of the only public hospital in Harlem, and that is Harlem Hospital. Columbia University just announced less than a month ago that they were laying off 10% of the doctors there, of which 8 doctors were in fact laid off. And it was only because of the tremendous outpour of shock and condemnation from the community were those doctors reinstated, but only for 30 days. And I think when you look at a community that is medically underserved and you look at the role that Columbia University plays and also the tremendous amount of dollars, in the millions of dollars, Columbia University reaps every year in terms of medical research in Harlem, certainly it is something that they can put back into the community. With respect, very quickly, to a couple of other issues about Columbia University, the university is a public policy agency, an institution in and of itself. It is not just a university. They are part and parcel of public policy that is enacted in this city. So they just don't stand in isolation as some pure academic institution. When you look at other models around the city, for example, in Boston, in Harvard University, and their land acquisition program, well, they came up with a viable and very honestly a brought together community group in which that university, Harvard University, the same conservative institution, donated $20 million for an affordable housing program. None of this is forthcoming from Columbia University, who admittedly is one of the richest private institutions in this city. So the university knows what the problem is, they understand what the problems are, but they have consciously decided that they are not going to do what they can to better the conditions of the surrounding community.
Well, I want to move back to this issue of community and student collaboration for students who are a very transitory population and don't have the background that you two as seasoned organizers in the neighborhood, in that community, have in terms of what happened with the former community boards, what happened with former attempts at expansion. How do you go about working with students in a way that's productive and useful, but also, you know, respectful of students as activists themselves?
Well, very quickly, when we first met with Elizabeth, we saw this as really a golden opportunity because Columbia University, we know for so long, have discouraged students from not only venturing into Harlem because of, quote, the safety issues, which is really ridiculous because there hasn't been any attack on any student in Harlem ever. That I can account for, or certainly if it has happened, it is rare to begin with. So there is a deliberate part, a deliberate tactic and strategy on the part of the university to put and separate, have a divide between the community and the students, and part of that is based on racial lines. And what we say and what we saw, rather, was an opportunity to coalesce with these student groups and to expand that coalition as it has occurred. And again, this, I think it happens pretty naturally. because I think the students themselves and their own activism, because the students aren't totally with blinders on, they are involved in the anti-war movement, so they see pretty clearly. So they understand the need, and from there we hope to go on in terms of concrete programs that Elizabeth has talked about that we will work out with the students in terms of how do we move forward to check the university and its expansion, but most importantly, it adverse racist and economically deprived impact against the community of Harlem.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up in a couple minutes, but Liz Edwaskin on the line, on the phone, can you give us a brief comment also on this issue of how students can be engaged in this issue in support of community concerns in a way that is also interesting and important to students themselves?
I mean, I think it's a very interesting question because it's one of the things where since our group has come together, I've noticed that there's been a lot of responses in the school, like one in terms of sophisticated PR, President Bolinger decided to do these fireside chats now where he basically gives himself another PR platform to tell the students now exactly what he thinks. So we haven't had an interactive dialogue yet with him. But in terms of students, is that a lot of students email me all the time now, come up to me in school, say, I want to get involved with this. I'm doing a project on gentrification. So the interest is definitely there and the wariness is there. That's why we're trying to do a petition to gauge that feeling and express it and consolidate it. But as far as something long-term, I think that's a more difficult question because because with students leaving all the time, it is hard to keep that momentum, even if the sentiment is there. Although I think we have a great group of students, and I have a feeling that it won't be a problem. One thing that I hope is that we get recognized as a real student group, with an official student group, which we aren't now, and that way at least we'll be in sort of a university mechanism, and at least with the name and at least getting some money to make outreach efforts. But I think that if it's going to last long, we're going to have to keep working with the community, we're going to have to keep making contacts every year, we're going to have to keep staying at that sort of organizing level where the older students talk to the younger students, and we have a large presence on campus in terms of the work we're doing, because then people will realize that there's efforts around this issue and that there's a network for them to plug into already.
Now, can we add just final one word in terms of employment? And this is very important. There is a longtime community activist. His name is Jim Houghton. He's the founder and director of Harlem Fight Back. They have tried throughout this year to meet with President Bolinger, and he has refused to meet with them. And it is around the issue of employment. The employment issues that the university talk about in their record, it's really bogus when one understands how Harlem Fight Back has been rebuffed over and over and over by the university on the issue of sustainable employment and an employment program that could really make a difference in Harlem, where the unemployment rate is almost double that of the city. So it's important to notice that. Also, very quickly, we want to encourage the listeners to come out to a program that the Harlem Tenant Council, along with Harlem Fight Back, is having on the future and direction of WBAI. It's going to be on Monday, December 29th. That's 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. It's at St. Mary's Church, and that's at 521 West 126th Street. If you want more information, you can call the Harlem Tenants Council, and that's at 212-316-2240. So come out and join us on December 29th. That's this coming Monday. It's on the future and direction of WBAI, and you can also meet the candidates who are running for the local advisory board. And this is the work we try to do in showing the community how important this radio station is. And we thank you so much for having us on the show now.
Thank you so much, Nellie Bailey of the Harlem Tenants Council, Liz Edwaskin of the Student Coalition, and Tom Kapner of the Coalition to Preserve Community and the 121st 22nd Block Association. Thank you all for joining us. And also, if you want more information on the Columbia expansion, you can check out the Columbia Spectator website at www.columbiadailyspectator.com. They have a listing of articles about the expansion and relevant maps and statistics on there as well. Thanks for joining us.
Also,
and
you can email us at ethicsofexpansion@yahoogroups.com.
That's right. Thank you all for joining us. You've been listening to Rise Up Radio. You are listening to Rise Up Radio still on WBAI. It's 11:31, and we'll be back in a moment with discussion of affirmative action.